Well, welcome to our annual Oscar podcast. This is Tim Reedy of America Media, joined as usual, I think this is maybe the ninth time we've done this, by our culture columnist, Bill McGarvey. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. Good to see you.
And of course, our friend and colleague, editor-at-large, James Martin, Father James Martin.
Good to be with you.
Now, Jim, you were going to lead the conversation today. As we like to say here at America Media, we lead the conversation because you have seen the fewest of the films.
Yes. So I have seen two out of the eight films.
So, but Bill has seen them all as usual. He's done yeoman's work here. So thank you, Bill.
I do the work, so you don't have to.
You've seen three, right?
I have seen three.
Right. So. Okay. So, you know, maybe what I'll do is I'll interview the both of you about the films, and you know, we can also talk about some of the issues around the films as well.
Yeah.
And the first one is certainly one that our listeners and readers of America will be interested in, which is Spotlight. And that's the story of the Boston Globe's coverage of the sexual abuse scandal in Boston. So a very important film, I think, for Catholics. And why don't we start with you, Tim, because you were a journalist around that time and working on those kinds of things. And what did you think of it as a journalist and as a Catholic?
Well, I think, first of all, I've reviewed the movie in the pages of America, so you can read my take on it. But I was working in a newspaper at that time, so I was initially really drawn in by the whole, it is sort of like an All the President's Men type story. And it, you know, just seeing the, you know, the, it's amazing. It only happened 15 years ago, but some of this stuff seems like it's coming from another time in terms of like going through the morgue, as they called it in a newspaper, where you went through the old newspaper clips. That pretty much ended when I had started. Everything was computerized. But the way that stories, you know, kind of, you know, this was before Twitter, before Facebook. So stories, kind of, you could still kind of hold off on reporting things. You know, there was much, probably less pressure from other media outlets. So stories like this could probably develop in a way that might, I think, be difficult now. But so as a journalist, I thought it was a really well done kind of portrait of a newsroom. The way journalists dress, for example, I think was very accurate. A lot of khakis. But of course, as a Catholic journalist, the story of the sex abuse scandal. I was reluctant to see it at first because I thought, oh, gosh, I don't want to go through this again. But the style, which was generally, you know, they told the story in very plain detail, but and they just chose one or two victims to let them tell the stories, and it was just so effective by just picking certain cases and not. It doesn't overwhelm you, but it's really, really powerful.
Well, I was very I still haven't seen it. I'll confess, as a priest and someone who did my training in New England and know a lot of those places, Boston College High School and Chevers and places like that, I still haven't seen it. I have not sort of steeled myself enough. But really, it was talking to you, Tim, after you saw it, that really has made me want to see it. And reading your article really made me want to see it. And what did you think, Bill?
I mean, I'd agree with what Tim said, absolutely. It's a fascinating movie in the sense that it's clearly about something that we all know about. And yet, somehow, because I spoke to so many people after, so many Catholics especially, who said, I don't know if I can see that. And so many people with sensitivities, certainly around, you know, mainstream media and the treatment of these things. And a lot of conflicted, especially some older Catholics I know who maybe are expecting a hatchet job, et cetera. And all I could tell them is that I think it's the absolute opposite of a hatchet job in many ways. The beauty of the film, I think, if you can use a term like beautiful with a film like this, is that it really complicates. In some ways, we know very much who the villains are. In other ways, it complicates it in the sense of responsibility, in terms of, there's clear responsibility in terms of people, in terms of authority in the church and et cetera. But it doesn't exactly exempt all of us either. There's a sense that so many of the people who were on the Spotlight team should have seen this and didn't see it and didn't want to see it, perhaps. So I think it was brilliant. I also think it's fascinating because it's a movie that has got some of the actors who've gotten notices from it, I think, didn't do particularly good jobs. It's not like I thought
in the film?
Yeah, I didn't think Mark Ruffalo, who I think is a great actor, I didn't think he was particularly good.
Oh, I thought he was great.
Did you really?
Yeah, I think he was really good. Maybe because I kind of know that journalistic type, this kind of disorganized reporter who you think, how does this guy hold down a job? You know, he's divorced. And then when he gets the scent of a story, you can just sort of see him kick into high gear. So maybe it's because I knew people like that.
Yeah, no, I think Rachel McAdams is particularly special either. I thought Keaton did a great job. I think Michael Keaton, Liev Schreiber did an amazing job. And of course, as the Jewish editor, not from Boston, going into that tribe, everybody on the Spotlight team was Catholic on some level in their lives. It was a fascinating dynamic there.
And apparently it's also about the complicity of the police and even the Boston Globe team.
Oh,
and
lawyers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, lawyers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's, I think, that as Bill was saying, the real strength of the film is that it makes you, everybody coming out of the film, comes out of that film feeling, oh, gosh, all those, you know, thank God I'm not one of those people. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a Catholic, you feel culpable because you feel like, why wasn't more done? You know, and it was, and it's basically making the argument, I took it to say, the church isn't just the priests or Cardinal Law, it's all of us, even those of us who may consider ourselves lapsed Catholics, and the fact that we did not act, we are also culpable.
So you both would say that it's fair.
Oh, I think incredibly fair.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things you could definitely pick out. Like, I think it conflates the story of the the diocesan abuse with, like, it talks about Boston College Prep.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
In a way that it kind of conflates those stories in a way that, like, the lay viewer would not understand. Those are actually two different cases. And I know some people have been unhappy with, there's a Boston College communications spokesman who's, like, name-checked in it.
Yeah.
And this person is, I think, written saying how devastated they were by seeing their name used in that way. So there are some people who are not happy with every element. But overall, I think it was very... This guy is a Boston College grad, Tom McCarthy, who wrote and directed it. So he's somebody who, you know, is probably struggling with this himself.
His mother's very Catholic. McCarthy's mother.
He's the director.
My sense is different.
Yeah, he's done The Visitor. His stuff is great. The Station Agent stuff that
he comes from a very Catholic family.
Yeah,
in sense,
I mean, I think The Visitor. I would recommend everybody see that one.
Brilliant
about
movie.
The detention system in this country. But yeah, this was. I mean, he has a kind of, as I said before, kind of a low key style. But for this film, it worked very well.
Well, I'm moving on to a different kind of
anything more upbeat, Jim?
Corruption. A different kind of corruption, which was handled, from what I understand, this is a movie I really want to see handled in a quite different way. Is The Big Short.
Well, you're hitting my two favorite movies of the year. The Big Short, I thought, was, again, it could have easily gotten lost in the nooks and crannies of a very, very, very complicated story. And not only that, I mean, in some ways, what Spotlight deals with is not complicated in the sense that it deals with a crime, and the crimes involved, or the absolute obscene sort of use of power in what The Big Short is a little bit harder to detect. And I thought Adam McKay did a very good job, you know, making very, very complicated and very, quote-unquote, nuanced ideas around finance seem really approachable.
And it's based on the Michael Lewis
right, book.
Right. Can you explain a little bit what it's about to the
reader? Oh, I'm sorry. It's about the financial meltdown, about the housing.
Please explain collateral.
Yeah, can you explain collateral? What is it? So basically, securitizing these loans where, again, and as he's unweaving, he's unrolling the spool of, and again, it's hard to sort of point to one person. It all went bad here. But just the system securitizing, basically a decent idea from the 70s. I forget the gentleman's name who decided to make these mortgages into securitized properties or products to what it became, which is hiding really poisonous stuff.
Yeah, it was supposed to distribute risk, which is a good thing to do,
yeah.
But it ended up being kind of gambling, essentially.
Right.
Now, it's done in a very, from what I understand, almost a kind of entertaining, lighthearted way at different points. Did you think that worked in the movie?
I thought it did, because otherwise it would become really hard to watch. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people could easily criticize it for simplifying or trivializing, I should say, certain things. I thought he was using it as a very extreme example of using a completely ridiculous person to like a porn star,
right?
To describe what a tranche is. You know what I mean?
Do you feel that one of the things we've talked about in this podcast before is, you know, does it glorify? We talked about this in terms of the Wolf of Wall Street. Yeah, does it glorify these people, or does it make them look immoral?
No. I think some of the. I think these.
Did you see it, Tim?
Yes, I did.
I'm sorry. I thought this is one of the ones you didn't see.
No, I should.
So, what did you think,
Tim?
No, I agree. I mean, I think Adam McKay, Anchorman, right? That's what he kind of made his name. So it's really surprising.
Yeah. He's Will Ferrell's producing partner,
writing partner. But yeah, very, very effective. I mean, I read the book and I thought Michael Lewis did an amazing job explaining these very complicated.
Yeah.
But even that book would probably be inaccessible to most the movie going audience. So. Yeah, it was a wise move. You know, he kept the pace up. He, you know, had people like Margot Robbie in a bubble bath explaining, you know, tranches or whatever. So it was fun, but also, like, you come out of it, you know, feeling like, you know, there's there's all these losers, there's some winners. It makes you, the whole idea is that you're rooting for these people who are actually betting against people losing their homes, or betting on the fact that people are
right,
are going to lose their homes and mm-hmm. go into debt. And that's what happened. And you're kind of, so it, it put you in a weird kind of moral position.
Did it remind you of The Wolf of Wall Street at all, in the sense that Leonardo DiCaprio becomes this sort of larger than life figure that you're kind of rah-rah for? Or was it more, were they more kind of compromised?
No, they were more compromised. I guess, who was the main character in it?
Steve Carell character?
Steve Carell. No, I'm thinking of
Christian Bale's
Ryan
Gosling?
Ryan Gosling, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah, he was one of the,
he's
sort of
closest
name.
To the, like, DiCaprio in that,
yeah,
like,
that's true.
He's good looking. He's kind of wears the, you know, he kind of plays the part, but he also acknowledges that he's kind of morally compromised, mm. which is he has more kind of self-awareness mm-hmm. than the DiCaprio character.
Okay.
Kind of does.
And what both of these films do really is show the importance of incredible journalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both films do. They're really great, well-reported people who explain.
Excellent point. Yeah.
You know, it's really in that sense a wonderful homage to great journalism and the need for great journalism.
Well, here's a nice seg, since we were talking about Leonardo DiCaprio. Did you see The Revenant?
I did not.
What did you think of? Is that how you say? Are they saying it the French way, or is it the Revenant, or is it the Revenant?
I say it the English way, the American
now,
way.
Now, let me ask you a question. The story is about, if I understand it, the story is about a man who's mauled by a bear and left behind by mm-hmm. his friends. Is that right?
Yeah, he's basically, I think, a guide to fur trappers.
It's in late 1800s?
Yeah, or? I don't exactly. The time period is maybe 1860s, 1870s, maybe, mm-hmm. 1880. And I saw it about a month or so ago, so I don't remember the actual name. I feel badly about that. It is beautifully shot. It's based on the real story of the character who, forgive me, listeners, I forgot
it's
his
okay.
name.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
We'll call him Leonardo. And his character is essentially on this epic journey to right the wrong of somebody who had taken the life of his son. And he's basically in the middle of hostile territory and trying to, through the most incredible weather and you know, mountainous terrain, try to get back to home.
Well, let me ask you a question. What makes it so powerful? Because, you know, all I think about is the movie. What was the movie that Robert Redford, where he was the one man in the sailboat? Remember that?
Oh, yes.
Alone, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I started watching, and I thought, I don't know if I can watch this for, you know, an hour
dark.
And a half, and I yeah. couldn't. What makes, I mean, it sounds pretty bleak. What makes this sort of compelling?
To be honest, I think it's gotten a lot of, it's been trumpeted a lot, especially for Leonardo. There's these moments in films, obviously, that we see over the years. It's like, oh, Martin Scorsese has to win for Hugo because he didn't win for Raging Bull.
Right.
You know, so it's the same thing with, I think, Leonardo in this. We want to see him in his star role that's going to get him his Oscar. I think it's beautifully shot. It's the same director who did Birdman. Very different film.
Inarritu,
yeah.
Mexican director.
It's really beautifully shot, and it's done, I think, with all natural light. Tom Hardy proves himself once again to be one of the most amazing actors on the planet. And DiCaprio is very good, and it's a very big story. And it's a very hard, it's kind of like 12 Years a Slave. Boy, I don't want to see that again. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful movie, but I do not want to see it again. So I think it's beautifully shot. I think he's an incredible director. I think DiCaprio does a very, very good job, whether it rises to the level of he should be best actor. Mm-hmm. I feel like the pressure is on to make him best actor, but it's a well-done movie. It's bleak.
Speaking of Tom Hardy, did you see Mad Max?
I did not, no.
Did you
Although
see
I hear great things about it.
Yeah.
I it's a great movie.
Yeah.
Now, let me just be clear.
This was the most unlikely
totally.
To me.
Right.
I mean, it's the same Mad Max series as Mel Gibson's, right?
Right. This is a little like putting Tropic Thunder up for Best Picture or something. It's a little bit out there. But, I mean, I say that partially in jest. Mad Max is a very bleak, apocalyptic movie that I think is a great example of what the Academy's probably trying to say is, like, it doesn't have to be Citizen Kane to be a really well done movie for what it is,
right?
And it is. It's an adrenaline rush. It's Tom Hardy is great. Charlize Theron is great. The characters. It's an insane comic book. It's not for everybody by a long shot, but it's really well done. I've seen it twice now, and
really?
I think it's and it's very well done. I think it's better than my sense is the earlier Mad Maxes, which I actually forget, you know, but. This is an interesting story, but again it's really like an adrenaline shot
mm-hmm.
For about 2 hours.
Well, speaking of shot, here's a movie about a space shot that's coming out. I'm trying to seg, which I think all three of us have seen.
Is the Martian? No, I have not.
You
seen
have
it.
Not.
The
okay, well then we can trade out on this one. do you want to ask us questions about the Martian?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is Ridley Scott. It's it. Is it your typical action movie like Mad Max? It seems like it's more kind of...
It's more thoughtful.
Thoughtful, a little more introspective. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. He, I mean, basically, Matt Damon is one of several astronauts who's on a mission, and the mission on Mars ends, and it aborts, basically, because of a big storm on Mars, Martian storm. And they all take off, and they think he's dead. So they leave him for dead, and, you know, he tries to survive, basically, and... a while later, he makes contact with mission control in, you know, I guess at NASA somewhere, and then they try to rescue him. I won't give away the end of the story. Mm-hmm. It's almost like Robinson Crusoe. I mean, it's him trying to survive and trying to plant and trying to get air and water and things like that. I found it interesting. I certainly didn't think it was Best Picture. I thought it was rather predictable. It's Matt Damon, who I think is a very good actor, but basically playing the same kind of plucky, resourceful...
Everyman,
mm-hmm. upbeat, gung-ho, I'm going to science the hell out of this, is one of his lines. And it seemed a little too predictable for me, a little somewhat cutesy. But, you know, as my mother would say, which I think is kind of the like the low as you could say, it held my interest, you know. I mean, I didn't turn it off. And he, you know, he is a good actor. Visually, it's very beautiful. It reminded me a lot of Gravity too, from a year or two ago, where they're trying to rescue people, and it had a similarly, shall we say, rah-rah atmosphere about it all. What did you think?
I think you're right about that. I would agree. To be honest, what I keep thinking this year, and we're talking about these films, I kind of feel that there's been a few years ago when No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood were up and Tree of Life, I thought, boy, these are great mm-hmm. statements of filmmakers.
Yeah, almost epic.
Epic. And I just, and while there's The Revenant has that element to it, I just don't think the movies are up to that snuff. I think The Martian's an okay movie.
Right.
I think your mom is right. It held my interest.
Right.
I didn't hate it. But that's hardly a statement for, and Matt Damon's a very likable character. And in many ways, it's kind of a survival story like The Revenant is in a lot of ways. But for Golden Globe, one for Best Comedy. I mean,
yeah, that was
bizarre.
They put it up because they didn't want it to, be up against a drama movie. But, you know, there was a movie that came out a while ago called Moon with Sam Rockwell, mm-hmm. where he plays much more interesting, clever, surprising, unusual. And this, I could have written this. I mean, it was sort of pretty, pretty obvious.
Your friend, Sam Rockwell?
Exactly. Well, you'd start a friend of yours.
Slightly biased.
If Matt Damon was your friend, I'm sure you'd be liking this movie a lot more.
Well, speaking of friends and connections, on the second floor of America Magazine, on our offices, we have a letter from President John F. Kennedy, a great favorite of our editor, mm-hmm. Matt Malone, written to James Donovan his help, for Mr. Donovan's help in getting the release of Frederick Pryor, who was in a movie, as part of a movie called Bridge of Spies. Did you see that, Tim?
I did,
so
yes.
We all saw Bridge of Spies.
Intriguing piece of history.
So why don't you start off? What Bridge of Spies is about the sort of prisoner exchange between
Gary Powers, and Tom Hanks, speaking
right.
of everyman,
right.
he's sort
yeah.
of like
yeah.
an everyman who's neck. He's now playing sort of the middle-aged
mm-hmm.
everyman.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great. I mean, I thought, first of all, I knew the America connection, so that was kind of fun to know about that. I think he must have been friends with some Jesuits on staff. He's a Fordham guy.
Well, and also he did, which I hope our listeners know, this man, James Donovan, who was played by Tom Hanks, also did the release for Walter Chizik.
Oh, wow.
He did?
Yes.
Oh, so this guy really was a Jesuit-trained guy, and I didn't realize he was connected to America at all.
That was the connection I knew, him and Francis Gary Powers. But please continue. So
wow.
Tom actually thought kind of an everyman.
Yeah,
and
he was great. I mean, and it's, you know, a piece of – I enjoyed that kind of slice of post-war – I mean, there have been, you know, Saving Private Ryan, you're saving Tom Hanks in the, you know, World War II movies. This is kind of the piece of history, slice of time after that. You're seeing him go to Eastern – basically East Berlin at that time. I'm kind of fascinated with that, just before the wall is going up. So
yeah.
This is what, like 1960, 61 or
right.
so?
Francis Gary Powers, 61.
Yeah, so that was really interesting. And yeah, I mean, it's Steven Spielberg. I think it's, you know, he seems to be, I'm interested, he seems to be doing better and better things these days.
But mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
never, you can't get to a Spielberg movie. The guy knows how to tell the story.
He
I mean,
does.
Just flat out, period. I mean, there's a lot of reasons that film critics will
visually
take
him to test. And,
there's
scripts.
A great interview I saw with him years ago. And he said, I think he used to tell filmmakers, you should be able to watch a movie with the sound off and be understand what's going on. So that's the way his mind works in terms of storytelling.
That wouldn't work with like My Dinner with Andre.
Exactly. Would not work. What the heck is going on here with The Butcher, The Thief, and the whatever that movie was. But Spielberg is a great American storyteller. I mean, I know that he's not an edgy storyteller, but I thought it was a really well-done film. I think Donovan, I mean, Tom Hanks once again cements himself as just, again, a presence that you just buy on screen. You like him. I thought it was well done. And Rylance, Mark Rylance.
Oh, he's great.
He is amazing. He's up for a Best Supporting Actor, and he's really great.
He's going to lose to Sylvester Stallone.
Probably. Oh, he's what?
He'll probably lose to.
Yeah. Oh, really? Can you imagine? Mark Rylance, one of the greatest actors of our generation. Sylvester Stallone.
That would be a shame. But,
well, you know, I found it interesting. I found the Tom Hanks role good, but I think I sometimes bristle at people who play kind of the same role.
Yeah.
I mean, Matt Damon is this sort of plucky everyman. Tom Hanks is a stolid everyman. Yeah. He was very good. I thought that the story was much more compelling than I would have expected because I thought I knew it. Mark Rylance was amazing. Yeah. I really enjoyed kind of watching him act. I mean, he's very kind of, I don't know much about acting, but kind of naturalistic. There's a scene there where he's smoking a cigarette as Tom Hanks is asking him a question, and just all the little things he does makes it look very realistic. He coughs, he chokes, he sort of smokes. It was like watching someone in real life.
He's a very quiet actor.
Yeah.
He was great in the Wolf Hall.
There's also a great line where I think Tom Hanks says a couple times, "Are you nervous?" And he says twice, "Would it help?
Would it help?"
Would it help?
It's a and you know, to your point, Tim, it teaches people, I think, about a slice of history that most people will have no clue about.
Right. You think about the wall coming down. You think about the end of the war, but that period in between, you know, it's kind of lost to especially younger viewers.
Yeah.
So President Kennedy sent America, just to clarify, I didn't know that, sent a letter about Donovan?
We have a letter from Donovan, Mr. Donovan, that we were given that talks about Frederick Pryor. And maybe our listeners, I'm trying to figure this out. There's another name on there, and it's Marvin Mackinnon. And I've always wondered, I've heard that the legend is Marvin Mackinnon is a pseudonym for Walter Chiswick. It may be actually just another, CIA person who was gotten out. But then you think they wouldn't have said the name in the letter. So anyway, if anyone's listening knows who Marvin Mackinnon is. now, a movie that I know has gotten lots of people very excited is Brooklyn. And you enjoyed it, right?
Oh, I did not see it.
Oh, you did not see it.
No,
I'm sorry.
Although it has been playing in the town where I live, I think it's had the longest run of any.
Is that right?
That makes
all
sense.
These Irish-American ladies.
Yeah, right. That's right. Tim lives in Bronxville, which is very
It's
Irish
sort of like
American.
The quintessential Bronxville movie.
That'll be very charming.
I read the book, though. So
did you?
Yeah, I like the – I'm going to mispronounce his name. Colm
Tóibín.
Why don't you tell us about the story, then I'll ask Bill about the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's about it. Immigrant young woman who comes to the United States because, you know, she can't find a job. She doesn't have any opportunity in the home country. Of course, the classic immigrant story. The twist is that when she's in the States, she winds up dating a young man, a young Italian man. They fall in love and she does well at her job. You know, she winds up meeting a nice group of young Irish American women. So she's doing well, but she's brought back to her home country. This is the kind of twist minister to her mother, who's, you know, ailing. And correct me on some of the details, because it's been a while since I read
it.
That's
true. Yeah.
But basically, and then she falls in love again when she's back in Ireland. So she has to kind of choose between, you know, and when she goes back to Ireland, she's more, you know, she's kind of more respected. She's more established. She's more confident. You know, because she had a job, she had dated somebody. So she was a different person, I think, therefore seen as more attractive to, like, I think she dates a wealthier Irish
woman. Interesting, because she's been
to the United States. Mm-hmm. So the question is, do I want to go back home and, you know, use this and kind of to a different life in Ireland?
Right.
Or am I really, you know, so it's an immigrant kind of straddling both worlds.
That's interesting. So what did you think of how it worked as a film, Bill?
I think it works well as a film. I think it's absolutely a fantasy for any Irish and Italian, especially Irish immigrant families, because it's a beautiful, and the actress.
Because why?
It's probably the story of so many of our families.
See.
I mean, on some level.
Not because it's glorified, but because it's so realistic.
I think it's
right?
a beautiful take on, wow, you're leaving, when you leave home in 1950 or whatever it was on a boat, you might not ever see these people again. And how many people do I know in my life? Not my parents, because my family's been over here since the mid-19th century, but so many people were like, back then, nice to see you. You're 25 years old. See you in heaven, hopefully. You know what I mean? It was that sense of like, I'm going to the other side of the world on a boat. We're not wealthy people. I'm not coming back. That's a very big, and she's going to this world and lives in a boarding house with these other. The best scenes are in the boarding house with the other women who live with the Irish woman who owns this brownstone in Brooklyn somewhere.
Other Irish women that live with her,
some yeah. an American mm-hmm. Irish and Irish American women, sort of out in the working world, not married yet, and the main actress
Saoirse Ronan.
I mean,
Ronan,
she's
yeah.
brilliant. She's great.
She
in this.
She was
she's
in.
Amazing.
The my favorite movie whose name I can't remember.
She was in Atonement. I know she was.
And the Wes Anderson movie, The Great Budapest Hotel, Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, she was in that. Oh, I forgot that. You're right. Yeah.
She was in Atonement as a young girl.
As
a mean young girl.
She's brilliant. And so, no, I think it's a beautiful movie. Our friend Paul Moses has written a book about Italian and
yes.
Irish. I've told Paul he should see that. It's a great book called Unlikely Union, I believe. And
it is, yeah.
And it's a great book. So I think it's a wonderful story. I think it's really well done. I would recommend it. I'm not sure it would be my best picture nominee for other reasons, but it's a great little slice of life. And I do think it gives you an image, an insight into, boy, oh boy, life was, I mean, today we can Skype, we can do it. And it's just, you're on the other side of the world. You know, in fact, she does in the movie, she loses a family member while she's over in the States and has to go back. That prompts her going back to Ireland to help out. And you just get the feeling of, boy, the choices you made had such big implications.
Sure, yeah.
And never seeing people again.
And what role did the church play? Did she have, she like, there's like an Italian priest she's friendly with?
Well, our friend Anthony, right?
Supposedly, he's in the
I talked to him at your son's baptism recently.
Father Anthony Andreassi.
I said, I heard Tim said you're in the movie. And he said, well, not really. Because there's a great Jim Broadbent character who is this Irish-American, or Irish priest. But Father Anthony is mentioned in the story that you read.
In the book, yeah.
He's not in the book. But anyway, Jim Broadbent is a great Irish Catholic priest who basically is you know, ground zero for people to come over to help them out, get their feet under them, and he's a wonderful pastoral presence in it.
Well, that's a nice balance.
No, it's a great
spotlight.
Balance. No, it's beautiful. It's,
no,
it's a
nice
great story of a great priest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely worth seeing.
Well, now here's a movie. I must confess my confession. I said to Tim when I looked at the list, I at least try to see some of the movies. I had not heard of it, and then when Tim described what the movie was about, I was not particularly sort of turned on by it. But it's The Room. Now, have you seen it, Tim?
It's Room. I don't
Room.
Think
I'm sorry.
No article.
Yeah.
See, you kept trying
the
to see
Room
The Room.
That, The Room is that is not that famously bad movie that's being remade. I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. There's a
really.
Yeah. There's a,
oh,
apparently a famously.
No,
bad
I had,
movie.
Again. I've read the book. The book.
Oh, you did.
Emma Donoghue, who's an Irish American writer. You know, the basic
bones
of the
story.
I mean, it's terrifying, but it's the story of a. You slowly learn as you start this book that this woman is living in this basically cell, like a workhouse, like a shed, mm-hmm. in the back of her captor's, you know, lawn.
Wow.
And she's been there for 5 years, and she has a son with her, who you quickly determined is her son via her captor.
Wow.
So basically, she's like essentially a sex slave
mm-hmm.
living there. And it's partly like telling the story of like, how do you introduce the world to a young person who has, you know, no concept that the world exists beyond these four walls. So,
is it modern day times?
Yeah, yeah. It's yeah. modern day. I mean, it's based in part on some stories. You know, there are stories out there.
Right. Very sad.
And yeah, very sad. You've got like Kimmy Schmidt, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. If you watch, that's like the comic take on all of that. But but how did you see? It was an effective film on its own.
I thought it was effective on its own, but it's because sadly we have heard stories about both in Austria and in Cleveland not too long ago.
Oh,
people have kept these poor women captive for so many years. And Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is a great, hilarious take on a very different, a similar idea. But
that's what Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is about.
It's about people who were in a cult that were held underground for years.
Wow.
Okay. And they come back into the world and sort of like what the world has changed.
Yeah,
and
it's
kind of like a you know, a fish out of water kind of
thing.
It's really, it's hard to watch. It's a great, it's really well done film, and Brie Larson is great in it. But it's hard to watch because there is a sense of, oh my God, just the reality of how horrible this is.
For people who haven't seen it, is it are there any disturbing scenes, or I mean, you see any of
the whole
flashbacks or?
No, I mean, it's not. I don't think this, as I recall,
in terms of the rape or anything.
No. You don't see that, but I mean, but the psychological horror of the actual existence.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I meant kind of graphic.
No,
sort of
as I recall, no. But it's just, it's not an easy film to watch. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a good, it's a well done film, mm-hmm. but it's very, very well done, and it's very effective. But it is hard to watch, and again, one of those films like, wow, that was really well done.
When did the book
sure.
come out?
A year or two ago. It's not that old.
Okay.
It's not that old. There's one of the Times best.
Did you
novels
read that?
Of the year.
Oh,
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, it's it's a good book.
Wow.
Well, so. A wide variety of films. So I'm going to list the films again, and I'd like you to tell me.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's
yeah, we powered through it this
year. Yeah, we did.
We powered through.
I'd like you to tell me what you think will win and what you think should win. So first, I'll turn to Tim. So the movies are Spotlight, The Big Short, The Revenant, Mad Max, The Martian, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, and Room. What do you think will win and what do you think should win?
This is really hard this year because from what all I've read, a lot of the awards have been split in some of the lead-up contests, so it's not clear who, you know, so there's no leading candidate as far as I can tell. So, I mean, I think there's a good chance The Revenant could win based upon the fact it won the Golden Globe. I have not seen it, so it's hard for me to compare it to, say, Spotlight, but I do think, you know, Spotlight or The Big Short, I think the ones that should win. You know, I think both of them are telling, as Bill was saying, complex stories in a way that's accessible, in a way that's sensitive, but also, they're really like moral films and that they make you angry.
Very much.
And they make you engage with the issues of the day in a way that, like, they don't allow you to just kind of turn away and say, you know, this is for somebody else to deal with. It's like, no, you are a Catholic, you are a U.S. citizen, you have to deal with, you know, kind of the evil in your midst.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Bill, so what do you think will win and should win?
I was always going to say that the two favorite movies in that list came out were certainly The Big Short and Spotlight. Between the two, I don't have a strong feeling either way. I think it's difficult to watch Spotlight as a Catholic, obviously. So, and part of me almost, in that sense, hopes it's not the best picture of the year to get it, but it's a wonderfully done film. It's an important film. So if it won, I'd be very happy for the filmmaker. But between the two of them, I think if either won, it would be great. If The Revenant won, it would be more for the filmmaker and his ability to. He's a voice out there who's really, obviously, really gifted and talented. Very different kind of story than these other movies. But I would think between Spotlight or I think my instinct tells me that Big Short could take it, but.
Really?
Could take the best picture.
All right. My prediction is that Spotlight's going to win it.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I always think of the, you know, a lot of the Academy voters are older, basically.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them probably couldn't stomach the bear mauling scene, which I've heard so much about. They probably turned that off.
It's hard.
Spotlight, you know, is at least it is very much like All the President's
right.
Men. I think the Big Short is a little, I mean, I haven't seen it, but this is just.
Well, I don't want a conversation.
It seems like a little too kind of sort of not tongue in cheek, but
that's
not traditional. The Spotlight is a sort of traditional
classic movie.
Right.
Yeah. What I don't want to happen is a conversation about how Hollywood hates the Catholic Church, blah, 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 which I just don't think anybody that's seen the movie can say that.
I think
it would be a misnomer completely.
Although there's a part of that where I could see Spotlight winning because it's sort of easier to say, okay, this movie that's critical of the church versus like the one that's critical of Wall Street, which, you know, we're all kind of...
Right.
We're all involved.
Well, and
we're
I can also see Hollywood patting themselves on the back, like, isn't this great? We made a great movie to expose the scandals of the church.
Right.
That's a painful thing. But it's a well-done movie. If it wins, that's great. And anybody, I think Catholics should see it, because I think it's important. It's important to see. But I will say that I think we might be living through the golden age of television, which is affecting the way that movies are perhaps not as epic and great as they were maybe even 5 years ago.
Well, and even if... Martin Scorsese doesn't win for The Revenant. He will win next year for Silence.
For The Revenant? Well, he's not involved with The Revenant.
Then he's not going to win for The Revenant.
He's not going to win at all for The Revenant. You're absolutely...
Silence, that's a big one, which you have been involved in.
Advising
on. So
that's exciting.
When are we going to have Scorsese on the podcast?
Well, we'll see.
Next year, we'll talk 45 minutes about Silence. And
exactly. And Jim's involvement with it.
5 minutes about Revenant Part 2.
Another not upbeat movie.
Right.
I'm sure Silence is not going to be easy, but I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Okay, good. Well, thank you to Bill
you.
McGarvey, culture columnist, Jim, editor-at-large America, and Tim Reedy here. We look forward to talking to you next year.
Great.
Thank you.